This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Those big blue recycling bins are ubiquitous in many Massachusetts cities and towns, including Boston, a sign of the city's forward-thinking vision on trash, global warming, conservation, advanced waste management. Or so we all thought. As it turns out, those blue bins, the sign of so-called single-stream recycling, are giving the city some mixed results. Here's one way to look at it. One way to measure the effectiveness of recycling is called the diversion rate, which is basically the percentage of our trash that is recycled. In Boston, that rate is 30%, but the national average is 34%. San Francisco, however, is way up there at 80%. In other words, Boston's recycling batting average is not so great, but don't lose heart yet, folks. The city and the state could take significant steps forward if they want to. Barbara Moran is a science writer who's penned a big article on this for the Boston Globe. You can find a link to it at our website, radioboston.org, and she joins us now. Barbara Moran, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. In a moment, we're going to hear from someone in San Francisco to tell us how they got up to that whopping 80%. But Barbara, let's start with you. I mean, I've for a long time thought single-stream recycling, glass, plastic, paper, dump it all together, that naturally it would mean we would be recycling more. Is that the case or not?
Well, you're definitely collecting more, right? I mean, a lot of people love it. People like me and you who just get to dump everything in there. It's fantastic. So they're definitely collecting more. The question is whether more of the stuff they're collecting actually gets recycled. So the problem with single stream is what you'd imagine is that things get a lot dirtier. The glass gets crushed. Things get coated with food. The paper gets wet. You know, everything gets mixed together. So the end product that comes out after it's all sorted is less valuable, less likely to be recycled.
Okay, so I want to ask you more about that in a moment because it's a little surprising. But in your Boston Globe article, you actually begin by taking us inside one of these major recycling facilities. I've actually been in one a couple years ago. I visited, and the first thing that I found surprising was just the volume of stuff that comes in every day.
Yes.
How much does the major recycling facility in Boston take in every day?
I don't have that number offhand. Okay. It's something like 7 million tons a week.
A week,
something
okay.
Like that.
But it's a vast amount.
I mean,
you described it as feeling like you were in the White Mountains because the heaps
were
so large.
It's just stunning. I mean, it's really awe-inspiring. It's like being this giant airplane hangar full of milk bottles and diaper boxes. And you almost can't believe it. Yeah, it was almost like hiking through the White Mountains and you're on these catwalks and there's these rivers of conveyor belts going this way and that way and every way, and it's amazing.
And all the stuff is there together. I mean, you say you saw like a red plastic sled along with the bottles of wine.
It all starts together. It all starts together in this giant mountain, and then it's like boop, 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 boop. Everything gets sorted out. You know, things are sorted by magnets. Things get sorted out by optical sorters and by size and all this, and then everything at the end is, supposedly, I mean, everything is pretty much sorted out into, glass, this type of plastic, that type of plastic, cardboard, paper, all the different things that you'd want.
At one point in time, though, actual human beings get in there with their hands, though.
At the very beginning, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why is that?
Well, they yank out the trash, the stuff that can't be recycled. So they'll yank out, like, plastic bags. Plastic bags will foul up the machinery in the recycling center, so that's why they have to be pulled off the line. They'll pull off food, bowling balls, meat, everything gets thrown in there, so all kinds of garbage that cannot be recycled gets pulled off and thrown into a pile and taken to an incinerator or a landfill.
Okay, so the bottom line is that there's a lot of stuff going into these recycling centers, but not as much of it is actually used for recycling as we'd like to think it is. And you say that a major victim of this is glass in particular.
Yes, glass is sort of the biggest victim of single-stream recycling, especially when compared to bottle bill glass. So, bottle bill glass, the stuff that, you bring to a bottle bill redemption center, about, 90% of that ends up getting recycled into new bottles, which is what you want. The stuff at the recycling, the single stream stuff, it gets smashed up, it gets mixed in with paper and bottle caps and other small things. It ends up in this big pile. It doesn't even really look like glass. You just think it was dirty confetti or something. And a much smaller percentage, I think some like 60% of that can get made into bottles. Some of it's actually used for landfill cover, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
I mean, or road. Road mix.
And is the amount of usable, recyclable material when we used to have to hand separate them at home, is it higher than what goes in, what ends up being
tossed
with the single
stream? Different numbers on that. I mean, people do say, I mean, definitely, I think when you separate, the more separating you do in the beginning, the cleaner the stuff is, if it is, you know, handled separately at the facility. I mean, if you separate stuff and then they just chuck it all together at the end,
what difference
does it really matter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So single stream recycling giving somewhat mixed results in terms of end, like the usability of the end product.
Yeah. I mean, I should say that, I mean, it's been great for the city of Boston and that they've saved a ton of money. So, I mean, the people who sort of suffer from it are the people at the end who have to deal with the recycled glass or plastic or stuff like that. And they have to pay more to deal with it. Right. And, you know, also, I guess the environment pays more because it doesn't get recycled.
So, but I still can't get away from that shocking fact that was in the beginning of your story about the fact that when it just comes to the sort of overall average rate of recycling, Boston is, you know, what, 30%? And San Francisco, 80%?
Yes.
What are the challenges that Boston faces that we can't even, like, break the 50% mark?
Well, San Francisco has a couple other really big things going for it. They recycle all the commercial waste, so all the stuff from businesses, and Boston doesn't do that. They also, the big thing that San Francisco also does is composting, so residents put all their compost in bins outside, and it's collected. And they also have something called pay-as-you-throw, where residents pay for garbage pickup, but not for recycling, and that encourages people to, you know, recycle rather than throwing away trash.
So the heavier your trash, the more you pay.
Something like that, yeah. I think you pay for like a size of bin or something like that. But there's very different ways of doing that.
Okay.
So a lot of those factors help up the rate.
And you also point out that there's just some sheer infrastructure challenges, like with San Francisco's, you know, major composting, municipal composting program. They have a place to put it.
Yes, exactly. And in Boston, there's a few little composting places, but right now there's nowhere to put it. Hopefully will happen sometime.
Well, you know, the pay-as-you-throw idea, which would be like you said, you pay for how much trash you throw out, and you don't pay for recycling.
Yes.
That's a really interesting one. And there are municipalities in Massachusetts who do this, right?
Many, yes, and a growing number. And the state is really pushing municipalities to adopt it. I mean, and it's interesting because in the East Coast, a lot of older cities and in most cities in Massachusetts, people have never really had to pay for their garbage pickup. So it's quite offensive to people to have to do it. And, you know, I have some friends in Brewster, Mass. They just instituted it and they are like so angry. They're just like, I can't believe I have to pay for my garbage. And Boston looked into doing it and then they shelved the idea. And, you know, there was a report done, an internal report saying that it would decrease trash, increase recycling, but it would also put this cost on, you know, residents, and they just decided they didn't want to do it.
So that's interesting because of the psychological and cultural barriers may be more difficult than the infrastructure and technology barriers.
Could be. They do argue that there would be infrastructure challenges. I mean, you definitely have to police it more, at least at first, because if you have to pay for garbage not recycling, people tend to hide garbage in the recycling. So then you have to send out the garbage
police. Or put their trash in someone else's bin.
No, they do.
You did not hear that idea from me. Listeners, I'm speaking with Barbara Moran. She's a science writer. She's published a fascinating article in the Boston Globe about the particular challenges in Boston's recycling program and what the city and even what statewide things can be done to boost the rate of recycling around Massachusetts. Barbara, stand by for just a second because, again, I just can't get away from the outlier that is the city of San Francisco. So let's go out there. Jack Macy is the Senior Commercial Zero Waste Coordinator for San Francisco's Department of the Environment, and he joins us now. Jack Macy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon / I guess good midday to you out there on the West Coast. But I really am impressed by that 80% figure for the city of San Francisco. And as Barbara was just telling us, you know, psychological barriers and getting people to change their behavior through making them pay differently may be a way to go. But how did you use that? How did you get people to overcome their unwillingness to change their behavior in San Francisco?
Well, it's a long history, and I think, you know, the whole diversion number game is a little tricky. It's not exactly apples to apples. We do look at, we follow the California methodology that was put in place back in 1990, where we count everything that's being discarded, so all the construction, demolition debris, the whole commercial, industrial sector. But basically, we've had a system in place in San Francisco going back to the early 20th century where people were paying for their discards and for their trash. On the residential side, it was just, it's been just the trash that they are that's going to landfill, so they into the, what we call the black bin.
But what about on the commercial side? Because I was reading some interviews that you've done for West Coast media outlets, and there were examples that you had to really work with businesses to get them to say, you know, put their organic and food waste into a citywide composting system.
Yeah, so I mean, I think so. We have a long history of recycling and paying for our discards. And in the 90s, we implemented a comprehensive food composting, but we started in small steps with just vegetative food and demonstrating it in different neighborhoods and with different types of businesses, and then eventually rolled it all out. On the commercial side, you know, paying for your trash, for your discard, as we like to call it, discarded materials, they're valuable materials, is important. And in actually many communities, even in the East, you have that where your municipality might provide free trash service. They're being paid through the tax base, so it's not free, but it looks that way. Often commercial establishments have to pay for their own contracted service. Mm-hmm. So paying for service makes a difference, and on the commercial side, it's really key. It's provided a critical financial incentive to help get participation.
Yeah.
The key is really implementing comprehensive, convenient, easy-to-use programs. Food composting has been really important, and we've gotten to a point now where we are diverting as much through our composting program as we are for a recycling program for many sectors. It's over 650 tons a day, say, of composting collection, and we're in that range, 700 tons a day of recycling collection.
Well, Jack Macy, so, what advice would you give? I mean, in a minute or so, because in a minute or so, what advice would you give to a place like Boston on how to boost that diversion rate or institute a composting program?
Well, I actually think that Boston is heading in the right direction. I know there was a lot of talk about how much is not being recycled, but looking at Barbara's article, I actually think that single stream facility seems to be doing a good job if they just have an 8% residual rate at the facility. I think that the trend towards single stream has been a strong one in the last decade or more, and the processing technology has continued to get better to recover more materials. And the reality is that extra convenience of everybody putting everything into a bin really does make a difference. So you are capturing a lot more material. You are ending up diverting more material. And I think as the recycling infrastructure evolves, it's going to be able to handle more and more of that material. And there's certain things to do to minimize contamination. So I do think that's the right direction. We've had single stream recycling in San Francisco since the late 90s. And that has been a key to our success, as well as comprehensive composting and food collection. So that's the big thing that I would recommend Boston to do, and I know that they've been looking at it. And in fact, Susa Cassino, the recycling director in Boston, who's an old colleague of mine, because incidentally, I used to work for the state of Massachusetts in running their composting program before I came out here 19 years ago. And so she's been out here seeing what we're doing, and I know that that's their game plan. So I applaud that, and I think the state of Massachusetts is doing some good things.
Well, Jack Macy, I'm going to have to I'm sorry to interrupt. Forgive me for interrupting you there, but I want to get Barbara Moran back in this conversation. And Jack, I appreciate the fact that you are saying that Massachusetts is on the right road towards that 80%+ mark. But Jack Macy, Senior Commercial Zero Waste Coordinator for San Francisco's Department of the Environment, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Well, Barbara, let me turn back to you. Jack said a lot about specific sort of technological and programmatic things that can be done. But in your article, you wrote about the fact that, for example, just across the river in Cambridge, the city of Cambridge is starting a pilot program in compost collection.
Yes. Yes. So the big low-hanging fruit that sort of the greater Boston area is not handling yet is composting, right? There's like 20-30% of what's in the garbage is food waste. And Cambridge got money from the state to start a pilot program. I think next April they're going to collect, they're going to give 800 households biobags and composting bins and start a curbside collection program and see if it works. And I know that the city of Boston is watching them closely to see if it can work. I mean, the problem is how do you scale it up to like a huge amount of compost? That's actually going to come into play, I think, next summer because the state has put what they call a food waste ban into effect. any company or hotel or hospital that produces more than a ton of food waste a week is going to have to compost it. So, yeah, that's a lot of places.
Yeah, I mean,
big high schools.
That's a major scaling up of this. And they'll have to compost it either on site or somewhere.
Somewhere.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some places are already doing it. Like BU does it. They send it to, there's several farms around here that do composting. There's a couple what they call anaerobic digesters around. And Deer Island is going to start taking a bit next year.
That's the solid waste treatment facility.
Yeah. But there does seem to be a question of where this is all going to be composted.
Yeah. Well, so this leads me to my final couple questions in the minute or so we have to go. There's a big goal here that the state has overall in terms of a zero waste goal.
Zero waste, yeah. Philosophy, yes.
By 2050.
Down to 90%. No, it's... Is that, yeah, something
yeah.
like that.
It's as close to zero as one can reasonably get.
Yes.
2050, you know, it's a significant amount of time away. Do you think that it's doable?
You know, there's a lot of things that have to come into play. It's the compost. It's getting people more on board with recycling. And, you know, there has to be sort of reduction in just the packaging stuff. I mean, you're given a lot of stuff that, you know, when you just buy something of plastic wrap and, you know, these things that you just can't be recycled, they end up in landfills. So there has to be, you know, a larger scale reduction in that stuff in order to get to zero waste. But San Francisco office has banned plastic bags, so that's something else they've done. So that's how you get rid of that problem, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, it was interesting to see in your article how when you were riding around with a solid waste manager for Boston, how, you know, he saw someone carrying a big stack of cardboard boxes.
A corner dumper, he called her.
People want to do the right thing, though.
Yeah, they want to do the right thing. People want to do the right thing. They don't want to throw stuff away. They want to know that the recycling is being recycled. So I feel like, you know, everybody's heart is in the right place.
All right, let's see if we can get to that 80%, Boston.
Yeah.
Barbara Moran is a science writer, and she's written an article about the challenges to Boston's recycling program. It's in the Boston Globe, and there's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Barbara Moran, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. It was fun.
And listeners, let us know what you think about how recycling can be improved across Massachusetts at radioboston.org. Stick with us when we come back. A sculpture garden pops up in the middle of the city. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.